All right, hi everybody, and welcome to the Test 5, Test Preparation Class for the elementary classes of the History at Our House program of American History. So as our routine is, we're going to just follow our normal routine, that is to say, and that is we'll go back and forth between the lower L and the upper L tests. Sometimes the questions are the same, such as basic anchor facts, sometimes not. So, of course, we'll give everybody a chance to answer certain questions and get through the entire thing, even if it takes a little extra time. And just a reminder, if you've answered the previous question on your test, it would be an appropriate thing to wait for, to skip one, in other words, and let somebody else answer the next one. Unless, of course, you have a really important answer you want to make sure that I know about and or want to test out on me to see if you got it right, then I'm usually willing to let people do that. So, here we go now. We're going to start with our anchor facts, and this is a very basic set of anchor facts, so anybody can participate in this particular list, of course. So, Patrick, get us started with number one, please. What happened in 1492?
Christopher Columbus discovers America.
Okay, that was not a hard one at this point, was it? Okay, that was number one. Number two, circa 508 BC, circa 509 BC. Hopefully that one is also just popping into your head when you see that prompt. Go ahead, Nemo.
Athens created democracy in Athens. A Roman created republic.
A republic. Oh, I'm sorry. I probably just cut you off right at the end there, but you got it right anyway. Romans created a republic. Athenians created democracy. Right, exactly. Okay, circa 3000 BC. Number three, please. Sigourney, what happened there? Oh, wait a minute. Sigourney's volume is not working.
Oh gosh.
Sometimes
monarchy has been going on till America.
Okay, say that again, Sigourney. I had a delayed technical problem. Go ahead.
Since the time of Menes Morgul, monarchy has been the norm until America.
Oh, that is a very interesting way of writing out the information. Now, you've done more than just describe the event. You have managed very well, in fact, to describe the significance of the event as well. So I certainly would not, you know, mark you down for that, because that's really good. I didn't ask for that, but so you got the Menes Narmer part as a monarchy. It's important not to miss the event though, right? So Menes Narmer does what, Sigourney? And then we get this, you know, the significance for the long, you know, for all of history. What did he do, Sigourney?
Unifies the lower and upper Egypt.
Okay, good. So as long as you've got that underlying fact there, then also reminding yourself of the significance is a great thing to do. As long as you don't lose sight of the description of the event itself. Okay, number four, 1861 to 65. Oh, sketty. Abby, go ahead.
The Industrial Revolution.
Oh, well, no, it's not within that span of 4 years, and that's not one of our anchor facts. So the Industrial Revolution doesn't fit quite in that nice little niche there. So I'm just going to use this moment for a second here, Abby, to point out something. There are certainly important industrial events occurring at that time, but that's definitely an error. And what I want to point out to you is the only way that you made that error is if you didn't check. In other words, you decided, oh, I remember this, and you didn't go into your class notes to see. If you had gone into your class notes and to your anchor fact timeline to check, you wouldn't have made that mistake. So just use this as a learning opportunity here. See, because you have thought of something that's related, but that's a wrong answer in this particular test, and it's wrong for a reason. It's wrong because you didn't check. Okay? So test preparation is not about what you remember. I know that a lot of people are tempted to do this. Oh, I remember the answer, and therefore I don't need to check. No, don't you dare. You must check. Okay, who can hear? Put your hands down. Who here can tell me why must you check? Why is that more important than remembering? What is checking? Why is it so important? Wyatt?
If you this is to travel, help to get facts in your mind, not help to remember them.
I didn't understand that. Say it again, please.
Well, it because preparation seats are to get those facts in your mind so you can remember them. Not to try to remember them.
Okay, that you're on the right track, but who here can remind me of what Socrates said? Which, since I haven't been reminding you enough lately, you guys have forgotten. So I guess I gotta do it every test because Socrates' advice will never get old. It's called philosophy and it never gets old. Nemo, go ahead.
Know what you think you know?
Know what you think you know, and know what you don't know, and know the difference, right? So, Socrates said, you have to check. That's what it means. You have to check. Know what you think you know. Check. So, you think you know something? Do you really know it? What's the only way to be sure? Check. Oh, now Abby disappeared. I hope she's not having a technical problem right when I'm trying to help her with something great because Abby knows a lot of great answers, but she needs this Socrates advice here for this particular question. Okay, so as does everybody. There isn't anybody that I know that can't use Socrates' advice. There isn't anybody that I know that can't use it, no matter how grown up they are. Everybody, I mean, I encounter this all the time. As a history teacher, what I do is I look around, as a historian, I look around at the world all the time. I'm always looking at people, how they act, what they do, how they are living. And I try to understand the choices they make and the world that they've created and what they're doing. And I notice this is a very common problem that people have. They think they know something and they don't have a clue. And yet, the worst part is not the worst part of not knowing is not the not knowing. If you don't know something, what's the worst part? This is what Socrates was very brilliant. What would be the worst part of not knowing? If you don't know, that's okay. Because if you know that you don't know, what can you do?
You muted him.
You guys just muted. Hey, are you guys arguing over there? Walker, Ellison, settle down. Abby, what can you do?
Check.
You can check. You can find out. It's okay not to know. You can find out. But Socrates said the worst situation of all is not knowing, but thinking that you know. Why is that the worst? Why is that the worst of all? And all of us need this lesson dearly. Why is that the worst situation? Not knowing, but thinking that you know. That's two mistakes in one. Not only are you wrong, but you can't correct it because you don't know that you're wrong. So you go around thinking that you're right, acting in silly ways or wrongly, and not being able to correct it. That's really the worst. And Socrates saw a lot of that in Athens. And sadly, people didn't appreciate him pointing it out. Most people don't. So anyway, we have to learn this skill early in life to not worry about being wrong. That doesn't matter. And in our household, Patrick has a fear of being wrong. I've noticed that a little bit. And it's natural. I had that too when I was younger. It's not fun to be wrong, right? It's no fun to get maybe a little bit wrong or to be criticized or to feel like somebody's saying you didn't do a good job. That never feels nice. But the most important thing is to have the right attitude. To say, okay, if I'm wrong, this is an opportunity for me to learn. That's what test preparation is above all. I don't care if everybody here gets all the answers wrong. As long as we learn together in the test prep, as long as we learn together and take some steps forward, that's what we're here to do. Okay. So, wow, that was a big long explanation. Sometimes Mr. Powell does those. 470, okay, so 1861 to 65. Patrick, what is that?
Civil War.
The U.S. Civil War. The American Civil War, absolutely. Okay, and then finally 476 A.D. Okay, Wyatt, go ahead.
German barbarians caused the fall of Rome.
Okay, the fall of the Roman Empire caused by the Germanic barbarians, yes. Okay, let's move on to the upper L, or, okay, we'll start lower L. Number six, what was the Missouri Compromise? What did it say the federal government could do to limit slavery? All right, Rosetta, get us started.
The Missouri Compromise was the agreement between the North and the South allowing Missouri to join the Union and a slave state, and Maine would be broken off from Massachusetts to become a free state.
Okay.
It said that the federal government could outlaw slavery in the territories west and north of Missouri.
Good. Good. Well, very well done. Very elaborate answer. I probably needed to give you guys an extra line for that one, didn't I? It turned out to be a little small, but okay, but very good. So it said Missouri could join as a slave state, and Maine would join as a free state, and it said that the federal government could now say no more slavery to the Northwest. Okay, good. Let's go to the upper L. Let's see if they had... Now, so this is a little bit of a different phrase, so I'm going to go ahead and get the upper L kids one chance to answer as well. What was the Missouri Compromise? What limit did it place on the federal government's ability to limit slavery? That's a little bit repetitive phrase there, isn't it? But you get it? It's a little bit of a different take. So, Abby, what's your answer there?
What I wrote was, when Missouri occupied part of the Louisiana Purchase territory, applied to join as a free state, as a slave state, the northern states were not happy. Since a state cannot join as a slave state without the support of the Union, a compromise was made. When Missouri joined as a slave state, Maine was added as off of Massachusetts as a free state. The limit that this places on the federal government to outlaw slavery is that even though a free state would join, just as whenever a slave state would join, a free state would join.
The first part, you've got a good description of the Missouri Compromise there. Okay? It could be shortened, because that's gonna leave you more room to answer the rest of the question here. So you could just say, Missouri Compromise was an agreement whereby Missouri joined as a slave state and Maine was added as a free state at the same time. So that could be shortened up, but basically you got that part. But the way that you explained the limit on the federal government's not quite right. So what you described was not so much the limit as the method of the compromise, which was we're going to add a free state and a slave state. I'm not sure that qualifies as a way of saying the limit. So... I want to see another answer here to express that differently. Wyatt, what's your answer?
The Missouri Compromise said that the Missouri Compromise of Missouri. Oh, that's a minute. The Missouri Compromise said that all territories from the Louisiana Purchase, west and north of Missouri would not have slavery. But the slave state said that the federal government
didn't control whether a state had slavery or not.
Okay.
The state did.
Okay, good, right. So that was the key thing, was it said the federal government, see, because the federal government could not say to Missouri, no, you can't have slavery. So what they could do is for the future, they could limit it in the territories, but not in the states. That's the key thing that Wyatt said. Okay? You could limit it in the territories, but not in the states. Okay. Anybody want to follow up on that one? Because that was a little tricky. All right, we're going to let the upper L kids do number 7, which is very close to number 7 for lower L as well. So, you know, we'll just kind of combine them right now because we got a little bit caught up at the beginning there. Mr. Powell did anyway. All right, so Sigourney, what's your answer to number 7?
The abolitionists were groups of people who wanted to abolish slavery in the USA. Two famous abolitionists included William Lloyd Garrison. He published a newspaper called The Liberator and created the New England Anti-Slavery Society. Another abolitionist was Frederick Douglass, a slave who had taught himself to read and escaped as an adult to the north.
Okay, Sigourney, you're so brave, and you did a great answer, but I'm not going to call on you anymore because you will lose your voice. So you rest that larynx of yours from now on, Sigourney. That was a great answer, but from now on, I want you to abstain, please. Thank you. All right, that was perfect. All right, so let's go to lower L now, moving on from the abolition question. Let's do number 8. What were two results of Texas joining the Union? Patrick, I would like to hear your answer.
The results of Texas joining the Union are there was a new slave state, and the Union beat Mexico and got all their territories.
Okay, so two results. That's good. So your answer has two results. One is the addition of a slave state to the Union. Yeah, definitely. Okay. And then the second one was that the Union beat Mexico and got all their territories. Okay, that's basically true. I think it would be better to express it this way. So one of the results of Texas joining the Union was there was a war between America and Mexico. Okay, because it's kind of strange to go right from Texas joins to the Union beat Mexico. Huh? Wait a minute. That's confusing. How come the Union beat Mexico? So it would be better to have, and you have about an extra line I see there, it would be better to have also, and the America and Mexico went to war, then the Union beat Mexico. Okay? So those are two results. Now, other people might have phrased this one differently, so anybody who wants to add their answer could do so. For instance, you could say, two results of Texas joining the Union were that there was a new slave state in the Union, and I guess pretty much that's the best answer. America and Mexico went to war, and then California joined the Union. That could be another result. Or there came to be a greater conflict between the North and the South over slavery. All right, so let's move to the next one for the upper L group. How did the addition of Texas into the Union lead to the addition of California as well? That's kind of a related question. Nemo, go ahead.
When Texas was added to the Union, there were still skirmishes with Mexico, which led to the Mexican-American War. Mexico lost and ceded a large territory. Within this territory was the future state of California.
All right, nicely done. Right. Okay, the Mexican-American War led to the addition of California. Okay, upper L team, I still haven't heard from Anna, Dana, Jack. I want some answers from everybody here. Number 9, what did the Kansas-Nebraska Act say? How did it affect the Missouri Compromise? Who's up? No, Nemo, you already just answered a question. That means somebody else has got to get on the spot here. So, Jack, did you try this one at all?
I tried it, but I couldn't figure out how it affected the Missouri Compromise.
All right, what's your first part of your answer?
The Kansas-Nebraska Act added two states whose slavery law would be determined by democracy or popular sovereignty.
Okay, not so, I mean, you gotta be careful. The Kansas-Nebraska Act did not act to add two states. It was an act that organized the territories of Kansas and Nebraska. That's not the same thing. And said that popular sovereignty would decide the issue of slavery in those territories. All right. So then who can help Jack with what he just said, which we just talked about the Missouri Compromise. The Missouri Compromise said there would be no slavery to the northwest of Missouri. So it should be possible for us to make a connection here. Where are Kansas and Nebraska on the map? My map. Compared to Missouri. Wyatt?
It lessened the area that had no slavery. Instead, it would be decided by democracy.
Map of the United States. Yes, Wyatt. All right, so you're on the right track there. So, okay, here we go. Zooming in a little bit on everybody's favorite country. And so we got Missouri here. And the Missouri Compromise said, to the west and to the north of Missouri, there would be no slavery. Well, this is to the west and to the north. So how is that affecting the... Now, Jack, I want you to try this on the spot here. How is that affecting the Missouri Compromise?
It affected the Missouri Compromise by no longer having the...
How would you express this? That you have a new set of laws. How would you put that? Instead of the old ones. What did they do then?
Amending?
No, I wouldn't say amending, because to amend is to add. This is to change. To get rid of the old ones and put other ones in place. What would be another way to express that?
Change,
okay. Anna says to replace, right? Yeah, to replace, or in this case, some people say overturn. To overturn the Missouri Compromise. Because the Missouri Compromise says, we're not going to have slavery. Now we're going to overturn that, and we're going to let people choose. So that's definitely not, that's a step back. That's not good. Okay. So, let's see here. We got to move along. So, lower elementary team, number 9. Did Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation free all the slaves? Explain your answer. All right, Patrick, go ahead, please.
It did not. The Emancipation Proclamation only freed the slaves of the states that seceded from the Union.
Aha, that's pretty good. So I like the way you answered that because you said it did not. So that was a good short answer. And it's your answer's mostly right, but not quite right. So pay attention here. Because Patrick wrote that it freed the slaves in the states that seceded from the Union. Well, actually, does anybody remember why that's not quite right? It's pretty good, but not quite right. Abby, can you help?
Well, the Emancipation Proclamation
said that all of the states that were in rebellion, all their slaves were free.
Okay, and it was in 1863. So were all the states that had seceded, were they all in rebellion?
No.
Not at that time, no. So some of them were now back under Union control. So it didn't even apply there. So forgive me for forgetting here exactly which ones. But some of the ones that had rebelled, parts of Louisiana, parts of Mississippi and stuff like that, were not in rebellion anymore. A little interesting technicality. So why could the president only do it, only free the slaves, in the parts that were in rebellion? Do you remember talking about this? Why was he limited to doing that? He's the president. Why can't he do more? Today the president would do more. Why couldn't he do more back then, Abby?
Because the law was that you can't do things like that and hurt states like that that are not in rebellion.
There you go. The law, in other words, which law?
The Constitution.
The Constitution says the president can't do such things. He cannot take these things away from the states. He doesn't have that power. He's not allowed to. The only people that can change the laws are the actual members of Congress. And they have to have a supermajority, and they have to work together in that way to change the laws. The president can't do it. So he could do it only in the parts of the country that were in rebellion, because now there was a war, and the president is especially in charge in wars. Okay. Interesting. All right, let's go to number 10. What did the 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments to the Constitution say? I guess that's still a lower L question. Can somebody give me that one? Let's see, I got Rosetta and Allison and Patrick. Who's going to do it? Rosetta, go ahead.
The 13th Amendment abolished slavery. The 14th Amendment allowed black people to vote. The 15th Amendment said that all citizens had the right to vote.
Didn't you say two things that didn't you repeat yourself there?
Yeah, I wasn't very sure.
You didn't notice that you repeated that because, yeah, you got the 14th and 15th a little tangled up there. So, Patrick, help Rosetta with the 14th, please.
The 14th Amendment declared all former slaves citizens.
Aha, that's the key word there, Rosetta. The former slaves are now considered citizens. Okay, and then only with the 15th do we add the idea that they also have the right to vote. Okay, so it goes in a certain order. So it's abolition, citizenship, voting. You can maybe try to come up with something like that, a three-word progression to remind yourself of how it worked out. Okay, good. Number 10, please, upper elementary. What is secession? How did President Lincoln respond to the secession of the South? Okay, Abby.
So secession is when states will leave the Union. President Lincoln responded to the secession of the South by using the power that he had now as some or most of the South was now officially rebelling, to treat them in a way that he was not allowed to treat states that were not in rebellion to the Union. He started the Civil War and he issued the Emancipation Proclamation stating that all slaves in the rebellion states were going to be free.
Okay. So I think you went a little far on this answer, because what you did here was you took the issue of secession and you took it a little further, all the way a few years in into the rebellion and into the Civil War. So I didn't quite ask for all of that. I really only wanted the part about secession. So I probably wouldn't penalize you for doing too much, because like I said to Sigourney earlier, you know, when you add to your answer, I'm never going to tell you not to do that. But just watch to be careful that you're answering specifically the question. So what's your version there?
Secession option is the decision to leave from a group. Lincoln said that he had to stop the South from seceding, so he asked the remaining states to give him an army.
Mm-hmm. To fight a civil war to keep them in the Union. That's it, exactly. Okay? So as the president, he could not allow the dismantling of the country that it was his job to protect. So he said to the states, send me troops. We're going to stop this from happening. Okay. Somebody new here, give me an answer to number 11. During the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation. Explain in your own words what it said. So this is the upper L version of that question. Somebody who hasn't answered yet. Or are you guys just along for the ride? Jennifer, can you answer that one?
Technical difficulties.
All right, good luck with that. Who else? All right, well, it looks like Nemo and Abby are in charge here today. Go ahead, Nemo.
The Emancipation Proclamation said that when Lincoln made war on the seceding states and conquered them, he would take all of their slaves and free them.
Okay, you know, I like what you did there. That's what I asked you to do. You said explain it in your own words, and that's what... So the states that were in rebellion, he would free the slaves. Now, I would accept that. I would say that technically what he said was they are free. Now, it's true that what you said is kind of interesting, Nemo, because it's one thing to say to somebody, you're free, right? To announce to the world, you're free. But the truth is, he couldn't really do anything for them yet, right? Until the time when his army was down there and actually made it a reality. So I like your way of putting it. Was basically saying, as soon as the army could get there, those people would be free. And from now on. Yeah, so that's kind of a good way of explaining it. All right, we are over time, so we're going to have to speed through some of this here. And so, number 12. If the 13th Amendment ended slavery in America, why were the 14th and 15th Amendments believed necessary? What did these amendments do? Jack?
14th and 15th Amendments were necessary to make sure the rights of blacks were protected. The 14th Amendment made blacks citizens, and the 15th Amendment allowed them to vote.
Okay, good. To make sure that their rights were protected. Okay, so let's continue on, since that's basically good. Number 13, what is the Industrial Revolution? Give an example of one of the big changes it involved. Wyatt.
The Industrial Revolution is important and rapid change. The Industrial Revolution is important and rapid changes to the way people live on Earth. An inventor named Samuel Morse invented Morse code and the telephone so that people could send letters at the speed of electricity.
Okay, good. So that's an example. I would like a little bit more precise definition, Wyatt. Okay, so an important change to the way people live on Earth, that's a general description of a revolution. But so in what way, because you could say that of the American Revolution too, that changed the way that Americans lived. They didn't have to follow the rules of the king anymore, right? So in what way did the Industrial Revolution change that is very important. So Patrick, what was the way? Making in doing what? Well, all right, if you're not sure, that's okay, but I'm asking you to think about it. In what way did the Industrial Revolution change the way people live? Who can give me just a thoughtful answer? You don't have to have it written down. All right, Anna, I want to give you a chance here.
I
I wrote that one of the big changes involved were new machines for spinning and weaving.
So but that's not what I'm asking. That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking about the way that life changed. What's your general answer to what the Industrial Revolution is?
A revolution in machinery to make people's lives easier.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. I prefer a little bit way of a different way of expressing it. A rapid advance in the way that people make the things we need in order to live. To make the things, to produce the things we need to live. Right? So that was the connection that I wanted you to draw between things like transportation and communication and medicine, food, clothing, shelter, and what was the other one? Water. We need those things to live. And that's what the Industrial Revolution changed, our ability to make those things and obtain those things and have those things so that we can live well. Okay? Now, the American Revolution made us free to be able to get those things. So, yeah, they go together, that's for sure. All right, let's try number 15 here really quickly because we're out of time. Abby, what about you?
For number 15. Wait, number 15?
Yes.
Okay. Before the Communication Revolution, you had to get in a wagon or on a horse or put your letter or letters on one of those to get your communication where you wanted it to go. However, in the Communication Revolution, people were given the ability to send telegrams, telegraphs, and finally the telephone was invented, which made it easier to pass messages at the speed of electricity.
Okay, right. The old speed of electricity. Okay, good. The speed of ideas radically changed. Okay, quick blast through the bonus questions. Who was the Union general who marched to the sea, Nemo?
Sherman.
What state was added to the Union at the same time as Missouri? Oh, Sigourney, I'm worried about your voice, but go ahead.
Maine.
Okay. In what war was the Battle of the Alamo fought? Lower L, it's number 15. Patrick, go ahead.
The Mexican-American War.
The Mexican-American War. Good. Upper L, 19. What is the name of the code used on a telegraph? Dana?
Morse code.
Number 20, lower L, 17. In the making of clothing, what is the name of the activity that produces thread, Rosetta?
Spinning.
Okay, my head is spinning. We went through that really fast. Okay, thank you, everybody. So those of you that had your answers were in pretty decent shape. So good job on that. Just want to remind you that we're having a long weekend, I think. Let me just quickly check up on that on the 2014-15 news. So we got the 2015-16 preview there. 2014-15 news says History at Our House April break, 20th, 22nd. Okay? So we are back on the 22nd of April. Thank you, everybody. Good luck on the test. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.